And welcome, everybody, here on YouTube. Manuel, I made it. For some reason, I seem to only be in one ear. Well, maybe that's my ear. That's a problem. Kyle, did you make it?
Somewhat, yeah.
Okay. And out there in Signal Land, I see Alex.
Yes, here.
I see Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
And I see Gila.
Good evening.
And can we confirm?
We are on YouTube. We sound good.
Okay, good, good. Well, that was quite a lively conversation. And now we're ready to share our conversation with our YouTube listeners. Anyone want to add anything for the previous hour?
Crypto means cryptography.
I still agree with that, though. You know, I hate to lose that acronym, that shorthand, but I think it's gone.
You could always make up another word, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And do we have a phone call? Oh, we already have a phone call before we even gave out the phone number. We shouldn't allow that, I don't think, but...
we knew who that is.
Yeah, let's just get it over with. 802-321-4225 is our phone number. Don't call it now. And I think whoever it was hung up, so... Okay, well, now maybe they heard me and took offense. 802-321-4225, so may the best caller win. Whoever calls first, you'll be the first. And that's the person calling now. Is it the same person who called before? It is. Okay, so we learned absolutely nothing from that. And good evening. So we have a slight hum.
Hello?
But not anything near the hum we had before. Who's there?
I hear a big hum, but I hear you fine, Emmanuel.
Okay, Rebel, let me ask you a question. A few weeks ago when we had the major hum, you said you didn't hear the hum. And now that we have a little hum, you say that you hear the hum. So are you just trying to drive us crazy?
I didn't hear it as much. I mean, I didn't hear it as much, but I did hear it. And I sometimes hear like blowing, like static, like blowing kind of static, like when you talk, you know, sometimes when you talk, you'll hear like this, like kind of a blowing static like thing.
Yeah, people describe my voice that way, so that's what you're hearing. What's on your mind?
Okay. I'd like to know, is there such thing back in the old days, I'm talking about like in the 80s and 70s, when call forwarding was a thing, can you do double call forwarding? Meaning if you had a phone in Staten Island and you had call forwarding, you forwarded your line to somebody in the Bronx.
And they forwarded,
then, you know,
you could have
and somebody in Queens called Staten Island, but it forwarded to the Bronx. Can the person in the Bronx forward his line to somebody in Manhattan?
Absolutely. Ask yourself, why wouldn't they be able to do that? You know, the phone company back then didn't have the ability to know that you were actually originating the call someplace else. They'd see an incoming call, and they'd follow the command that was programmed on that particular phone line and forward it someplace else. People used to have phone forwarding trees, you know, where it would just go from one place to another. But, you know, you never really gained anything from that because there were certain lines that the phone companies drew called LATAs, Local Area Transit. Something like that.
Right, yeah.
And if you crossed that line, you paid an extra amount. So it didn't matter if you were 50 miles from that line or 50 feet from that line. If you called a phone on the other side of it, you paid the extra. So unless you had some other type of service that you took advantage of and implemented call forwarding there, there was no advantage to having these call forwarding trees. If somebody knows different, please correct me, but that's how I remember it.
Well, I mean, you can't call forwarding trees. I mean, don't businesses kind of do that? Like, you know, you call the Staten Island, you're in Staten Island, you call the Bronx number, but, you know, they had it forwarded to Queens, but, you know, the Queens number has theirs forwarded to Manhattan. So when you're calling, you think you were calling the Bronx from Staten Island, but you're really calling Manhattan.
Well, yeah, and that was all the same zone, so there was no problem doing that. Of course, businesses would always pay by the minute. They'd pay more. So business lines were more expensive.
Right. I mean, that's why businesses do it now. Like, for example, I called a doctor's office here in Queens. I called a regular local, you know, 718 number. I didn't get the doctor's office. I got some answering service. Well, not answer, but just the main number for their clinic, I guess, and you know, I don't know. I guess that's forwarded to
What time did you call them? What time did you call
them? Well, I called it during the day, so maybe it was code forwarding busy, where if the person is on the phone and the doctor's office in Queens...
Or they might have been, you know, all out for lunch or something.
Right, and call forwarding no answer.
Uh-huh. Or they can just program it to go... Yeah, they can do things like that. That's very common.
Right, let's see. To me, there's a hum. I'd like to demonstrate. Well, people now have phone numbers, like, people move from Manhattan to Queens, and they still have their Manhattan number.
Uh-huh. You can bring your number with you almost anywhere now.
Right. You know, it's just like, you know, everything's like, let's see, what else? Let's see.
Maybe prepare next time, Rebel, for what you need to say. You have 30 more seconds before we move on.
Okay, all right. Do you know about computer networking? Like, back in the old days, how did computer networks, like, what was the topography of, like, a Ethernet? Like, you had five computers at one location, or in, let's say it's a local area network, in one room, but then you had five computers in another room and another five computers in another room, all connected to the same mainframe or server, whatever. Do each of the five computers hook up into, like, some sort of a special box or switch, and it's like a node, like, on the computer system, you can know what room that computer was in. Like, if somebody emailed you, you know what I mean?
I'm not sure exactly what you're asking, but you would know what computer you were on, or the network would know, assuming it's a full computer, not just, you know, a terminal connecting to the network.
It's a terminal connecting to a mainframe, let's say. Like, in college I had this.
Right.
Where there would be 10 computers in one room, 10 computers in another room.
Yeah, your terminal would have an ID attached to it, so anything you did at that terminal would have that stamp on it.
Right, and that ID would be those group of terminals in that one room. Another ID would be another group of terminals in the other room, the other place. And then, now, how does that work? I mean, like, does it, like, each room, each group of terminals have come into, like, a special thing before it goes to the mainframe server or whatever?
It often would require you to understand a little bit more about the building and the way the overall campus, let's say, is set up, and where the edge and core of the network are defined. And some of what you're asking also has to do with the structure or structured cabling, like how many cables go where for what size of a building or series of buildings, and then how directly they're connected to what you're talking about, like where core equipment would be or a mainframe would be. And if there's a switch in one building that is collecting all of the terminals connections and then connecting directly to another building or another part of the network, that might be identified somewhere, but you as a user would have to discern that and gather that information, versus people that work on that and designed it, they would map that out to facilitate constructing it. So yeah, you have the right idea. It just depends on how many terminals, because when you exceed a certain number of ports on distribution hardware, like an edge or other sort of switching system, you exceed the capacity and you'd have to have several of them. And then they have to have a link that actually gets to that other equipment, like you're talking about, where a core switch would gather everything and be connected to larger machines, like, as you said, a mainframe system. Or, and now nowadays, a lot of it would be like probably connected through that core switching and internet uplink to other sorts of cloud services, depending on, again, how it's designed.
It reminds me of my first ever experience with computers at my old high school, Ward Melville High School, where they had a computer room. And there weren't any computers in the computer room. There were just terminals. And they weren't terminals with screens. They were printed terminals. what are known as deck writers. They print at 300 baud on computer paper using dot matrix. I'd never seen anything like that. And it was really interesting. And every one of them had a particular label. I'd have to find my old printouts, which I still have somewhere, and see how they labeled each terminal. It might have been TTY or something like that. Probably was TTY. And each school had a room like the room at my high school. Some had even slower terminals that went 110 instead of 300. Some had CRTs instead of printers. But they all had, I believe it was called a multiplexer, that basically coordinated all the signals from all the terminals and sent them down the modem to a place called Lyric's Time Sharing, which is where the computer was. And it was where all the high schools on Long Island would basically connect, and they'd be able to talk to each other. Now, every one of those schools had their room labeled. So I guess to answer your question, yeah, you know, you would label the room a particular. In our case, you labeled it Ward Melville High School. You'd label it Half Hollow Hills High School. You know, you label all kinds of different things depending on who was using it. And then in that room, each terminal would have its own label as well. So anything you did, if you used the, for instance, the talk program, this was on a PDP-10, you would show up as coming from a particular teletype. And it literally was a teletype then, and what particular school you were coming from, or other routing information. And that was magic. That was really magic to see all that unfolding and not have any experience with computers before. And that magic, you know, it's still out there. You got to look for it. And I think you should keep exploring that, Rebel.
And hope.
Were you talking the whole time?
No,
okay.
I'm saying maybe it'll be at Hope.
Maybe it'll be at Hope, yeah. It's possible. It's possible.
What about on a wide area network? A wide area, like Blockbuster Video. They have like two or three terminals in each store.
Not anymore, they don't. Why do you pick something that's out of business? I don't know.
Well, no, I'm saying as an example of old Todd, like in the 90s and stuff, how they did it before cloud computing, before the internet. Like they had, each store had like two or three terminals. Did they identify each store to their mainframe in wherever, whatever state it was in?
I've talked too much. Does anybody else want to take this one?
I think it's just basic networking building blocks. The way it's always worked is kind of the way it still works, where, you know, individual computers will connect to a small subnetwork, and a bunch of those small subnetworks will connect to a bigger subnetwork, and those bigger subnetworks will connect, and, you know, you go... You go further and further along that line until you've got the really big backbone networks that connect the networks of networks of networks of networks together. And, you know, it's just the scale of it. It was on small scales back in the day. It's kind of that way now.
Okay, Rebel, I hope that was helpful. Please keep us in mind for your next series of questions, which undoubtedly will be similar to this one. Have a good night, and our phone number is 802-321-4225. Hurry up and call, because people call quickly, and then we can't talk to you because you wind up going to voicemail.
Yeah, it all depends on the connectivity type. And I think he was starting to get at intranets, how companies basically create their private network using uplinks.
Oh, he was evolving in front of our eyes.
Wider internet. Yeah, we're going through
it. Versus WAN.
Alex, go ahead.
No, I think it was basically just he was talking about LAN versus WAN issues, where LANs are, you know, the trick's in the name, right? It's local area network, whereas opposed to wide area networks. So the local area network's always got some kind of physical connection, whereas the wide area network maintains that connection through some kind of externality, like a leased line, you know, back in the day, or the internet or VPNs, things like that.
You guys think the internet was a good idea? I mean, I'm starting to wonder.
Yeah, I know.
It's not too late to destroy it.
A friend of mine once asked if maybe teaching sand to think in the first place was a bad idea.
So somebody called and hung up. Was it the same person who called and hung up the first time? So there's a series of people calling and hanging up. I guess people get impatient if we don't talk to them immediately. Listen, if we pick up the phone and we don't talk to you immediately, it means you're on hold. And we're going to get to you. Yeah. You might only get one chance because, you know, it's competitive. And we have another phone call. All right. And good evening. You are on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hello, this is Luigi from Washington, D.C. I hear the hum again.
Yeah, I don't know what to tell you. it's weird because we don't hear the hum when we pop the channel up without the phone, and we did last time. And now we hear it a little bit, but we don't hear it as much. If you can tolerate it, we can hear you.
Hey, I mean, as long as you're intelligible, it doesn't matter.
This is
a new dial pad for my 2500, which I still... Go ahead.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Go ahead.
I was going to hear your...
Yeah.
Are we on delay as well? It sure seems that way. Why don't you tell us what you'd like to say?
It might be a problem with me because this is an internet phone. It's not a landline, which would have low latency.
Okay.
But this is the 72 type dial pad, which is not the one that has buttons that push in all the way. It just be a little click.
Uh huh.
Okay. There you go.
Understood. Thank you.
Okay.
Wow.
Interesting with this dial pad, it seems to me that with this one, the 72 type one, I can actually dial faster than I might with just a touch screen on a mobile phone. Let's try this number. Oh, nope. Restart.
I don't know what's going on.
Okay. I was just demonstrating how fast I can dial.
Yeah, but we didn't hear anything. Okay.
You couldn't hear anything?
We can't hear touch tones, if that's what you expect us to hear. No, we heard nothing.
Yeah, I was just demonstrating how fast I can dial.
Well, you dialed so fast that it was inaudible. We hear that. Yeah, we hear that fine. Those are touch tones. We hear clicks.
Oh, well.
Yeah, we hear little clicks.
Interesting. Yeah, so maybe when you do it fast, there's no tone.
Sound very fast to me. Oh, well.
Yeah, there's something going on here. There's a mystery.
Oh, well.
Alex has something to contribute. Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, so let me ask you, caller. If when you're practicing dialing fast, does it actually register as a number dialed, or do you still receive a dial tone after dialing all of those fast numbers together?
I can dial out that fast. I did dial that fast when I was calling your number, yeah. Well, it must be a quirk with my ATA, I think it's a... Because I think some of the settings were... I changed some of the settings previously to try and get the broken dial pad working better, but oh well.
Well, we have a phone, too. Should we try and dial that fast to see if we have the same problem? Go ahead, Kyle.
I don't know if we can dial it.
Did you hear that? Caller, did you hear that?
Probably do it faster.
But you heard the tones.
Well, yeah. Why don't you try it one more time?
Who? The caller or us?
Caller.
The caller. Okay, go ahead. Try one more time.
Okay, here we go.
No, I just hear little clicks. What can you dial half the speed that you just dialed now? Maybe not as fast. We heard one touch tone.
Now, what if you dial really slowly?
I think it's because of the duration that I'm holding it down. I need to hold it down longer for it to register on your side of the line.
That's bizarre.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, I heard that. That was 1-800-555-1212.
No, that was 802-321-4225, the number for the show.
And that proves I don't know touch tones. See? Some people do. Some people can do that. I cannot.
Some people could, yeah. I remember Fiber was really good at that.
Does anybody want to try?
Yeah, go ahead. Let's do one more. Do one more number. Well-known one.
Are you saying you can read touch tones, Alex?
So, sometimes I can figure it out.
Okay. Kyle, why don't you send a number his way? What, just a number? One number.
Just any...
Just one number. Let's see if he gets it. What number was that?
Four. That was a four.
It was a five.
Oh, it's close. Okay. Yeah.
Close doesn't cut it. Close doesn't cut it. Caller, do you want to be tested on this?
No, I have no idea.
All right. See, I'm not alone. I'm not the only one that doesn't know touch tones. I know pulse. I can do pulse on a good day.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's just a pulse for each number, right?
Well, yeah, you don't have to. You don't have to minimize my skill. Yeah, it's, you know, I studied this and I've gotten better at it.
Oh yeah, my ATA should support dialing with my flash hook.
Uh huh. I remember the day I discovered that that I could flash the switch hook on a phone and dial numbers. And of course, the first thing I did was dial 11 to see what would happen, and I got some angry operator somewhere. But it was a great way around. Do you remember phone locks that used to be on rotary phones?
Mm-hmm.
Teachers would do this. I guess they had phones in the classroom, and they put a lock on it so you couldn't actually dial. But if you knew the trick where you flash a switch hook, you just would have to get good at flashing it the right number of times, and you could call anybody.
I used to do something at Staples. They had like a phone that you would be able to pick up, and it would dial customer service for you or something. And then it had no phone pad, no dial pad rather. So, you know, you couldn't dial from it. But if you got them to hang up on you, you could get a dial tone, and then I would use the switch hook to dial out from Staples and make long distance calls.
Well, you're very good at getting people to hang up on you, so I have no doubt that you did well with this.
Yes. Yeah. That's right.
That was also in the days of the...
Go ahead.
Sorry. Back in the days of the analog phone system, after a phone call, when the other party hung up, you would get a dial tone again. And I think that stopped when everything went over to ESS, where when the other party hung up, you would just get a dead line, and you would have to hang up and pick up your phone again if you wanted a dial tone.
One of the best practical jokes that I recall friends of mine playing on other friends of mine, or one person in particular, was convincing them that they were doing that, and that when the person hung up, it was tripping down to their dial tone. And that allowed them to make calls anywhere in the world. And in actuality, what he was doing was tripping down to his own dial tone. And he made all kinds of calls all around the world and got an immense phone bill the next month. Or his parents did, and he was grounded. Yeah, good times. Good times. Anything else, caller?
I'd like to bring up a video I saw on YouTube today. It's from a week ago. It's called Old Payphones Get New Life, Thanks to Vermont Engineer by... From the channel MyNBC5-WPTZ. It's about this electrical engineer who started his own mini phone company. You know, he just had a bunch of old rotary phones. He wired them so they hooked them up to a cellular modem and just let people make free calls in them. You know? Similar to, what's that place from? I forgot who they were, but they were doing something similar around the Bay Area, California, I think.
Yeah, I think I know who you mean. I think I do.
Yeah, they were in the magazine.
I don't think any of us know the name, though.
There are several projects like that. Regionally, people will take an interest, and this is something I really think is important, or it's a counterintuitive way for, I think, especially Americans to look at infrastructure, specifically stuff that was traditionally structured around a private business, and providing things free of charge or just making them work as a community effort is actually it's relatively easy to do, especially with stuff that's there, that's just sitting. If you want to make a smaller version of it, or one with limited functionality, but functionality nonetheless, it's worthwhile. You could maybe just provide a little teensy bit of what that service ever was under a traditional business model, but it's at least not just falling into disuse, even though it hasn't fully decayed, if that makes any sense. I mean, I'm thinking of phone lines specifically, but because upkeep and all that is hard. But I would argue, even under those business models, maintaining this, they maybe weren't maintained as well as some of these efforts. But there have been a variety of different efforts to revive infrastructure like phones that are just sitting and not really being used. And it's cool. It's cool to talk about. And if more of them worked, maybe we'd actually have a phone booth emoji.
That would be, you're pushing for that, right? You want a phone booth emoji?
It just occurred to me the other day.
How do we do that? Do we know the person in charge of emojis?
Is there the Unicode Consortium?
How do we find the consortium? Where do we track them down?
There's actually a whole, Alex knows, but yeah, there's actually a whole process you go through to propose new emoji, and then they consider them or whatnot.
Well, instead of phone at the top, it should say 2600.
Well, it could do that, but Alex,
hacker.
Tell us more, Alex, because you know the consortium, apparently.
Yeah, there was a process to do this, and I had a colleague who proposed the troll emoji.
Mm-hmm.
And I managed to go through the process and get it sorted out. So he would be a resource in this for sure.
All right. And what's the process? Is it involved?
I don't remember exactly. Yeah, I don't remember everything you had to go through, but there was some submission type thing, you know, as Rob indicated. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I do know somebody who proposed one and got it through.
Well, in seriousness, it's a iconic piece of a utility,
right?
And it seems unfair that they were supplanted by phones that use emojis, and actually
that's true.
Never got a proper due. That's all. In seriousness,
it's a nod to the past. It's a recognition of old technology, and it symbolizes communication. It's what we all should be embracing.
Even if it's like trading books or turning into like a mini library or some kind of other kind of art installation, they're worthwhile, and people recognize them. We really do appreciate them here, and they're in all parts of the world. So if you have one that you can access, make use of it, turn it into a community good.
But with regards to the consortium, Alex, how do we summon them? And is there some kind of a ritual that we need to engage in? Because we'll do it.
No. I think I might have some contacts over there through this person, too. So that might be the place to start.
Okay. Well, if it involves lighting an open flame, do that outside.
Yeah.
We don't want...
It usually is. Right. It usually does. So.
All right. All right, caller, any final words?
Yes, just check out Old Payphones Get New Life, thanks to Vermont Engineer on YouTube. Pretty interesting video. And also... System Source, the computer museum at System Source in Maryland. They're going to be having an Apple II conference. I don't remember exactly what it's called. I've seen it. I really do not want to run the risk of butchering their name, but check it out.
Okay.
If you're in the DMV, Washington DMV area like me.
Okay, great. Well, thanks so much for the call, and we'll be in touch.
All right.
Take care.
All right, and just remember, you know, all the idiotic people running our government with bowing down to Trump, you got to realize it takes a certain amount. If you have a certain amount of intelligence these days, you know, you'll figure this guy is not who he says he is, who he should be. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Only the idiots left supporting him.
All right. Thanks for your call.
All right, good night.
Take care. All right, 802-321-4225 is our telephone number. Go ahead, Alex.
I think the next caller should have to demonstrate to us how slowly they can hit the touch tones. Just to kind
Do you really want to assign homework to callers who haven't even called us yet?
Yeah.
I mean, usually you do that after they call us.
See, I want to see like a slow dialing contest here.
All right, if that's what people want, 802-321-4225.
I think that's just called toning the conference.
Exactly. Yep.
And I think you need to explain that term to people who might not know what a conference is.
Yeah, you have to explain that term.
What toning the conference
is. Not know what that is.
Okay. So back in the day, we would have teleconferences in the freak community. And these would be gathering places where people from all over the country could call and just chat on a shared line by some means or other. And people... trolls, actually, nod to the emoji, would call these things and just hold down a touch tone so nobody on the line could hear one another. And that was called toning the conference.
We didn't have much of an imagination back then as far as naming things, but it's lasted. You can still do it. You can still tone people, I guess. It's just a little harder.
Yeah, that person was called a toner. No, don't let him into the conference. He's a toner.
Yeah, among other things.
You know, like, you didn't want to have
the toner.
No. I do have this book from the 80s about TV theme songs, and there's a section in the back about how to play TV theme songs on the touch tones.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if we, you know, if we get to a point where we really need to fill some time, we could, you know, play the Addams Family on the touch tones.
Well, Mary Had a Little Lamb is two.
I can do that one. I can do that one.
981-2099. I think that's what it is. 981-2099. Yeah. You just have to, you know, do it at the right speed. So
802-321-4225. What with cell phones, I don't think you can determine the speed. I think it's all set at a particular predetermined length.
Yeah, I don't know if holding down a button on a touchscreen does anything anymore. It is like the caller was saying, touchscreens are not as precise. You don't have as much control when you're dialing. It's the reason that I think people are starting to revolt against touchscreens in automobiles, because, you know, you need buttons and switches when you're driving a car so you can feel what you're doing.
Okay. This is me, I think. Okay, so I'm calling on my cell phone. If I turn down my microphone,
it'll be a lot less confusing, except not to me, because I'm hearing myself half second later. But what I want to do is try playing the touch tone song. Uh-huh. Hang on, my screen disappeared. Okay. God damn it. It's harder when you can't hear it. Hang on. Okay, well,
you get the sense. You get the idea.
Yeah. Was that 981-2099?
What now?
Was that 981-2099?
I don't know what you're saying. Well, what do you mean? Those weren't the numbers I was hitting.
Play the song.
I was going 085 back and forth. That's all I was doing.
Oh,
well, you're really bad at this, identifying touch tones.
Yes, no. Yeah.
But if I had a landline, I'd be able to do that very easily because I can hear it. You know, it's just one more thing that's gotten harder with cell phones.
Yeah.
We could call in on our landline.
Yeah, well, you have to know the tune. You have to study it. Okay, we're going to close things up if we don't get more calls. So 802-321-4225, got a couple of minutes, and I don't mind early night.
That would be nice.
Yeah. And if you don't want to call us on the phone and talk to us, you could always call 833-WBAI-NYC and throw in on WBAI's fundraiser. Keep us going, or go to buddy.wbai.org and keep us going that way. BAI still needs your support, still needs every bit of support that's available out there from its generous listenership.
It does. And I do want to, speaking of listenership, say hello to the 48 people who are currently with us online. We're glad you're here. And pardon me, I have a hiccup. Can we get one more like?
There we go.
You want me to pick that up? And good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Okay, if nobody else will call in, I guess I'll call in.
Well,
again.
You realize, Rebel, this is next week's call for you. So use it now, but you can't call next week.
Okay, let's see.
You understand that, right? If you call next week, then you'll be banned, and that just keeps getting worse. So, okay, another Rebel call tonight, but that means no Rebel call next week. Go ahead.
Okay, let's see. Calling Verizon is very annoying because they don't... Oh, no, what do I want to say?
Why don't you ask this question before you pick up the phone?
I forgot. I was going to get it straight.
I can't hang up because this is legally his call, you see. So, yeah.
Let's see.
I should have been better prepared.
You've screeched the show to a dead halt. You realize that? We can't move forward okay, now. You realize
why did you get
this
a wired look? Okay,
this
why
is a June's
okay,
call.
Oh, yeah. Who pays for? Okay, why does WBAI have an 800 number? Aren't they going to? Why would they need to pay for the?
They don't have an 800 number. We have the 800 number.
No, no, they do too. So call in to donate. Why would you have a number that you have to pay for to get donations?
Well, if we can somehow have an 800 number that's donated to us, I imagine they can have the same thing. They're a lot bigger.
So who? Oh, so somebody's paying for all their calls?
Sure. Somebody has to be paying for everything.
So somebody's paying for these calls. I see. Look, because it's like 10 cents a minute when you call an 800. Like, if I called the 800 number for this show, whoever's running that 800 number, they would be paying 10 cents a minute or something like that.
I couldn't tell you. I have no idea how much it costs or who's paying for it or what. We're just the voices on the other end.
You can't do a CNA on an 800 number, can you?
CNA, do they even still exist? I don't think they do.
No, like customer name and address. Like you could go to a phone number and find out who, like 802-321-4225. Oh, that belongs to Google.
You got us. We're Google.
But you go to an 800 number and see what company that 800 number belongs to.
Yeah, historically there were ways to do that with a toll-free number. I don't know how much luck you'll have with it now, just as the same as with like trying to CNA an individual.
CNA, by the way, for those who are frustrated that they're not getting an explanation, stands for customer name and address, and it was a number that every phone company would have where you would call up. Sometimes you'd need to use an authorization code, sometimes you wouldn't, and you would simply give them a phone number, and they would give you the name attached to that phone number, and if they had it, the address, the opposite of what information would give you. And it was widely valued by hackers everywhere. Hackers and phone freaks would trade CNA numbers and use them so they could basically see what particular numbers belong to whom, especially if it's like a modem that picked up during a scan or a fax machine or something else that was mysterious that we needed more information on.
There's the calls directory.
Yeah, the Coles directory did the same thing, pretty much. It was a massive book, but you had to subscribe to that, and that was expensive. There were some libraries that actually had Coles directories. Mm-hmm. I think I might have one somewhere. And they're bigger than phone books, actually. They're bigger than phone books, and they're hardcover.
Bring it to Hope.
I should bring the massive book to Hope? Yeah, that sounds like fun. I could do that, I suppose.
Well, I'm going to be going to in July. I'm going to be going to an odd country this summer. Besides going to Russia again, you know.
Okay, hold on. An odd country. I think we should try to guess. Will you let us guess?
Okay.
But you got to give us some kind of a hint to start with.
Well, it's a Stan country.
Well, that narrows it down quite a bit. I'm going to go with Tajikistan.
Close.
No, I'm either right or wrong. It's not a close thing.
Well, no, it's not right, shall I tell you? It's,
no, we got people here. Go ahead. Who's next?
Rob, is it Uzbekistan?
Oh, you said Uzbekistan?
That's what he said.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Damn it, Rob.
Oh, wow.
Way to go, Hud.
Way to make me look like a fool. I'm going to remember that.
And then up to Novosibirsk, Russia, which is the capital of Siberia.
Yeah,
third largest city in Russia.
And that might be your new home if you're not careful. So, when are you doing this? July?
Probably July. Maybe. Yeah, probably July.
Well, it's not winter at least, so there's that.
Well, no, that's I'm not going to go in like September or October.
Mm-hmm.
But,
mm-hmm.
And it's going to be interesting being like 10 hours ahead of New York City time.
Yeah, I guess it will be. You'll have that on us. Anything else before we wrap it up for next week?
500 miles from Russia, 500 miles from China, 500 miles north of Afghanistan. Pretty interesting.
I'll tell you something interesting. You are going to be pretty far away from Moscow when you go to Siberia.
Yeah, I know.
But if you go to a train station, you will note that all of the clocks are on Moscow time, because that's how they work.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Basically, every clock in a train station is coordinated with the Moscow time zone. Other clocks in other parts of the of villages will be on local time. But in order to keep the trains from confusing everybody, they have everything on Moscow time.
Oh, so the train Siberia Express runs through there, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah, it sure does.
Yeah, and it's the third largest city. I visited Moscow, the largest city in Russia, mm-hmm. 2 years ago. Then I visited St. Petersburg 2 years ago. Uh-huh. Now I'm going to visit the third largest city in Russia.
Wow. Well, you pretty much will have seen it all by then. Not much left.
And it'll be the last time, because it's really a pain. I just applied for the visa again, because the visa expired last year. So. Uh-huh.
Well, I hope they let you back in.
Yeah.
All right, well, Rebel, this is going to do it for next week's call. We'll talk to you again, hopefully, in 2 weeks.
Okay.
All right, be well. And our phone number remains 802-321-4225. This is what happens when people don't call. We get people doubling up, and now I got to keep track of that. So let's give it a couple of minutes for people to call in. Go ahead, Gila.
Our friend and frequent commenter, Funsox, was talking about calling in. He said, but I don't have anything to say. I said, that's never stopped anyone before. Funsox says, the only thing on my mind is being scared to visit the USA at the moment. So I wanted to share that. So, you know, save you the international call. But just putting that out there.
Okay, we have a phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
I don't believe he finally hung up.
Yeah, he'll do it occasionally.
I would note that you seem to have a somewhat increasing generosity of spirit towards him.
It's more just being wound down, you know. Eventually, we all give up.
Yeah. Well, he one of the reasons I called is that he whose name we dare not say. Doesn't seem to be particularly stupid, but very, very lazy. He's obviously on the internet. He obviously has the tools necessary to call up a search engine, and all of the questions he's asking with regard to networks and computers, etc., the answers are all available on things as simple as Wikipedia.
But isn't it better to have a conversation and discuss these things?
Well, it depends how much other people's time you want to take up.
Well, that's true. That's true.
I mean, he's not only taking up your time, but all of the people who may call to listen to a fruitful discussion, either on the air or overtime.
Go ahead, Kyle. Kyle has something to say. Go ahead.
I would agree. Wikipedia is actually fantastic for learning about different technical things, either that once were with the telephone network or with modern, or as they exist now with modern protocols or any kind of programming.
Yeah, you can look up Wikipedia on Google.
Technical
you can find
stuff,
it there.
Basic electrical stuff.
What's this about Google?
I say, please don't use Google.
Didn't you just say to use Google for Rebel to look up things?
I think he meant that as like a general stand-in for search engines. But.
Okay.
There are other very decent search engines available where you don't have to be tracked and give up your personal information.
Kyle.
Trackable information.
Absolutely. In defense, though, what he's asking, we do try to like bring people in that may not understand a lot of those topics, and it is worth just answering the question from as much as we might know off the top of our heads, but it would be probably a more challenging conversation if we were talking about things that aren't necessarily factual and maybe a little bit more philosophical or political even, or social, like social cultural, like how people are using technology, how people are misusing technology. Anyway, go on, caller.
Yeah, with regard to search engines, I primarily rely on DuckDuckGo and configure it to my own settings rather than using the defaults. it's very private. It's a very decent search engine. There are others out there. I don't need to go into that, but there are some very good search engines. And would the conversation with he whose name we dare not speak included some of those discussions in depth of other things, they might be worth listening to. But as it is, they just, I'm sure most of the people listening find them annoying. One of the things I wanted to call you about, you've gotten into several discussions in overtime and on the air about cassette tapes, and I don't know if you're aware. If you're not, here's some information for you. NPR has a program called Radiolab, and they've done a series of programs called mixtapes, mixtape, one word. You can search it out and find it. It's sort of a subset of programs. I believe it's three or four at this point, of Radiolab. And it has its own page. Again, if you get to the Radiolab page, there's a tab up the top for mixtape, and you can go to a page of just those programs, which are all downloadable as well as listenable through your browser. I prefer to download them and archive them. But either way, they're listenable. And given your interest in cassette tape, one of the things about cassette tapes that also crosses things you've spoken about is one of the programs sort of chronicled how early cassette tapes being passed from user to user in Eastern Europe kind of predated the internet and sort of spawned spawned the internet. It's a very interesting episode of the series.
Well, I'll have to check it out. Sounds interesting.
Yeah. As I say, just search it and you'll find it.
It's the subject matter is cassette tapes, or are they playing things from cassette tapes?
Both.
Okay.
Both. They have some of the old cassette tapes as this started in Eastern Europe, it was a way for them to pass music, American music, around.
Uh huh.
Because there was no internet at this point back in the 70s.
Well, it's the way we pass music around too, I recall.
Yeah, but they did it basically by getting it off the air, and then taping it.
Uh-huh.
And passing the tapes around.
Yeah. Well, they'd have to. Is it? It's just one tape got passed around, or did they make copies of the tapes?
No. It's sort of. I'm trying to think of the word. It was a way of multiplying. So one tape would get passed around and then transmitted and taped by a number of people, and then those tapes would get passed around. Quality wasn't very good, but it was a way of getting the music
right.
Spread.
Yeah, that was magic.
Yeah, so I wanted to make you aware of that.
Okay, I'll check it out.
Also, two other references for you. If you're not aware, On the Media has been doing a series of programs called The Divided Dial. There's a subpage from the On the Media page. On the Media is you'll find it on the NPR page and on the WNYC page. And there is a separate page, a subpage, that again with a tab up at the top of the main page. You go to the subpage, and it's only the Divided Dial episodes on that page. Downloadable and listenable through your browser, which is a very interesting look at the propagation of shortwave as a communications medium and its transition from an early sort of global communications broadcasting medium to a far-right free speech, which became a far-right wing, radical right-wing medium, and the station up in Maine that was selling airtime for, I think, $50 an hour, and it branded himself as free speech without any restriction.
Yeah, we were on that station for a while.
Oh, were you?
Yeah. About 10 years ago, 15 years ago?
Something like that, yeah. Someone was rebroadcasting us.
Yeah, no, but we actually, we were part of that because we're on the schedule. I remember this, uh-huh. And it got to be too much. It got to be too much coordination, and somebody had to pay for it, and I don't know if we were paying for it or somebody else was, but yeah, like the caller said, there were a bunch of right-wing shows on there, and it just got more and more like, you know, you're on some kind of conservative talk radio thing. I know they had other shows as well, but yeah, there was a lot of wacky stuff, too.
Yep, and apparently it's still in operation.
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, you know, there's a lot of call for that. Do you spend a lot of time listening to any shortwave today? I know it's not all right-wing conspiracy stuff.
No, I don't, but it was mentioned in either the last episode or the one before that.
Mm-hmm.
The woman who basically produced the program and is the voice of the program as well. This has been like a long-term project for her. Said that they actually put the program out over this station. I can't remember the call letters. She said they've received communications from people thanking her for putting it out over the shortwave. That it was a very pleasant break from the usual fare that is found there.
I think the station is WBCQ, the planet. Does that sound familiar?
Sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds right.
I was wondering if maybe you had heard of this SDR project out of the Netherlands, where you can connect online to a shortwave radio over there and tune it yourself, and multiple people can tune in at the same time. You can find out exactly what is broadcasting on every frequency. You can chat with people about what else is broadcasting or anything that you find.
I don't remember if she mentioned that within the program or in an interview that I heard with her the other day. Brian Lehrer had her on. I think it was Brian Lehrer had her on as an interview subject, and she may have mentioned it there. I remember maybe about 10 years ago, I had some contact with a guy who was a ham operator, and of course at that point things had really gone digital, and it was everything was mobile and in a handset that he carried around with him. And he was explaining to me basically that it was pretty much like that things had changed quite a bit from a guy sitting at a bench out in his radio shack in the backyard talking into a microphone one-to-one.
Mm-hmm.
And that it had all been, I guess you'd call it, multiplexed.
Yeah, this phenomena is I think known mostly as like web SDR. It's the ability to use someone's antenna, not necessarily owning all of that equipment, and you can do it, host it, and many people do host them on their websites and allow users that are on the internet to scan and even do things like chat and stuff like that. And the one that we really like a lot is the University of Twente University in the Netherlands. Their electrical engineering department has a really fantastic kind of low low, and it's not a flashy web page. It's very functional.
No, though. It works so perfectly, though. It really does. I'll give out the address in a couple of minutes, but you can. I was listening to BBC Radio 4 on long wave, which is an awesome thing to do. Those are frequencies below shortwave, and that's big in Europe. But you can listen to anything that happens to be broadcasting that they can receive in the Netherlands. I was listening to Radio Pyongyang from North Korea, and they still use interval signals. So it's like really old school. But there are all kinds of other things to find. And, yeah, you'll find, you know, the conservative right-wing conspiracy stations from the United States. But you'll also hear pirate stations that are playing music with full AM dynamic sound. So it's almost like it was before, but it's so much easier to use and so much more open for more people to use it.
Is that all one-to-many or one-to-one?
What do you mean, each frequency?
This SDR setup, is it basically you're just getting onto an antenna and becoming your own shortwave broadcaster?
No, you don't transmit. This is all receipt. And what happens with those SDR setups, they allow you to sample the entire radio frequency spectrum, and it actually has a visualization, sort of, I think, what's called a waterfall. But that graphic allows you can zoom in and out on that spectrum, and a lot of the different frequencies are tagged and labeled so that you can zoom in and identify various parts of the radio frequency spectrum, listen to that channel, and then chat with other users that are also maybe listening to that channel or other channels.
Uh-huh.
And it's mostly just to monitor shortwave.
You showed me something on this, Kyle, once. I think we were monitoring a data signal and decoding it at the same time, and it was displaying a graphic. That wasn't my imagination. That really happened, right?
Yeah, the pulsing of transmissions on different frequencies can actually create artwork on that visualization I was talking about. I'm not sure exactly how that works, but it is done, and occasionally you do see things that look like an image.
Yeah, we haven't really dived into this very deeply.
We're very new and novice to it. It's been something that we've featured at events, and we've been aware that this technology has become much more affordable and much better. And so, like you said, it's not the one-to-one sort of person with a license just using sort of a dial tuning an older piece of equipment. This is all more like computer controlled and external devices that are then part of whatever someone's antenna installation might be.
It's what I like to see, where new technology is helping to boost old technology so that more people can appreciate what shortwave is all about, and they don't have to put up their own antenna, they don't have to get a shortwave rig themselves, and they can discuss it with other people. And we never had that ability so easily before, so it's really cool to see that.
And it gets more people listening to the radio frequency spectrum.
Yeah, there is something exciting about that. My one contact that I remember, that I have memories of, you can probably tell from my voice I'm not 22.
You could be.
Back in the, I guess this would be the early 60s, late 50s, a friend of my parents had one of these radios that had AM, FM, and shortwave on it.
Uh-huh.
It was a fairly smallish radio.
And did it have names of cities printed on it?
No, it just had frequencies on the dial.
Okay.
It may have had names. I don't remember if there were any in small print on the dial. It wasn't that large a radio. Although they did have another friend that had a cabinet type radio that was in their living room.
Yeah,
probably. I'm guessing it was probably vintage 1930s.
Uh-huh.
I would have seen this probably in the late 50s, and it had a big part of the dial was shortwave.
Wow.
On that radio. But what the radio I was talking about the first friend, I remember being at their house and listening to the radio, and there's something thrilling about just pulling signals out of the air that are from God knows where.
Absolutely. And people today don't really get to appreciate that. Even with television, you used to be able to DX on TV, pull in signals from we're in New York, we pulled in Philadelphia and Boston sometimes. You can't do that anymore.
I had a couple of crystal radios when I was a kid, and, you know, sure, there's something very exciting about pulling in Chicago or further west, you know, when you're just a kid and you're trying to pick something off the crystal. And then a little later, I had a tube radio. I was a fan of Gene Shepard's.
Oh, wow, Gene Shepard, on WOR?
And I would get into bed. I had this little wooden case radio next to my bed, and I had unscrewed the light bulb inside so it wouldn't light up, and I patched a set of headphones into it, and pulled the earpiece off and stuck it in my pillow, so when my mother looked in on me, I would look like I was asleep.
Uh-huh.
And I would listen to that and listen to Gene Shepard, but also with that tube radio at night, because it was an AM radio, Shepard was on WOR.
Right.
You would, on that tube radio, pick up stations from all over the country.
That's amazing. Yeah, he would go on for 45 minutes. He'd go on for 45 minutes at a time, just rambling about one thing or another. It was always interesting.
A lot of those recordings, I don't know if you're aware of this, but a lot of air checks of Shepard you can find online.
That's true.
And download them.
We have a show on our station, The Golden Age of Radio, Sunday nights, where we play a lot of Gene Shepard.
Yes, I'm aware of that.
You wouldn't happen to be a Bob and Ray fan, would you?
I enjoy them probably more now than I ever did.
Okay.
I appreciate them. Finding their stuff online is possible, but not as possible as finding Shepard's stuff.
Right.
And his stuff is not all that easy to find. I'm fortunate that I have a bunch of, I think about six or seven CDs that are chock full of Shepard air checks, and I've downloaded a bunch of stuff myself from the sites that were still up at the time.
Well, you may want to give Max over at WBAI a call on Sunday nights, because I know he has access to a lot of Gene Shepard and probably stuff that you haven't been aware of.
That raises an interesting question about the operation of the station.
Mm-hmm.
When there's an issue on the station with broadcasting or the streaming dropping out, there seems to be no number to call. There's no way to call anybody at the station to let them know the stream's gone down.
Yeah, it's the same as almost everywhere else, where it's hard to reach people by voice, and we depend on email and text and things like that. So I wish I had an answer that would be satisfying, but we share the frustration, because I know there has been a huge problem with the stream lately. I don't know if it's fixed. I think it was better today. But it's been really hard to get,
I had trouble with it on Sunday night.
Yeah.
I listened to All Mixed Up.
Okay.
And there was problems with that, with the stream. And that seems to be a chronic problem. It's an annoyance for me, but there doesn't seem to be a chief engineer anymore who's responsible for keeping an eye on the broadcast as it goes out. Whoever's engineering pre and post All Mixed Up seems to be stepping all over the intros and outros, and the archive is precisely cut off at the hour plus 8 seconds.
Uh-huh.
And so Beauchamp's outros get stepped on virtually with every program, so it's hard to catch a really clean archive copy.
You might have better luck reaching Peter Beauchamp himself. I know he also is on WPKN in Bridgeport.
Yeah, I've tried to find him and reach out to him without success.
Rob, did you have something as well?
nothing to do with the broadcast.
Okay.
It's all on recording.
Hang on, Rob Esselman, go ahead.
Yeah, just to let the caller and everyone else know, as you said, it's not easy to get people on the phone anymore. But if you want to contact the station, you can go to WBAI.org and click over to the staff page. There are links there to directly email our interim GM, Bob Henley, and our interim program director, Keziah Glow. And if you contact those people with issues like this, they will get forwarded to the right place.
Yeah. By the way, I don't know if it's your phone or your mic, but I could barely hear you. For some reason, Emmanuel's volume is good. Yours isn't.
I'm sorry, Rob. That's just the luck of the draw, I guess.
I blame myself.
Well, he seemed as loud in my ears as I am in my ears. And
not coming through on the line.
Well, he advised you to go to the WBAI.org webpage.
No, I was able to
okay, you heard
check
that.
It out, but
all right. Well, listen, we have sorry. To go. This has been great. I'm going to give out that link. So get a pencil and paper and check out some shortwave online, which is a lot of fun.
Good.
And keep listening, please.
And let people know about the programs that I gave you the info on. I think your listening audience on or your radio audience,
uh-huh.
Which is quite a bit larger, I would hope,
mm-hmm.
Would be interested. And the NPR programs are terrific. That's a whole other discussion I'll have with you some other time about NPR and MBAI.
Yep.
I also, if you have a half second left, another resource. Because you're very on target with security and privacy, and for that reason, I think Off the Hook is perhaps one of the most important programs that BAI is broadcasting. There is a program called a podcast called Security Now. It's put up if you know security, you know Steve Gibson, who is the coder of the genius who wrote SpinRite, which that's a whole other discussion, but SpinRite is a program everybody with a computer with mass storage should have. It's grc.com, and if you're not familiar with Security Now, you know, go to the Security Now page. Just about everything you've talked about it with security has gone into in depth on that site, and it's all archived.
Okay.
I'll
check it out. SecurityNow.com.
Yep. It's GRC.com.
Oh, GRC.com. Sorry.
GRC.com. The Gibson Research Corp.
Okay.
See, it's one of the few three-letter addresses that are out there.
Yeah, really. I'm surprised.
because he was early on it. He's the guy who came up with the term spyware.
Okay. Well, that's definitely something.
The first guy who discovered spyware in ads.
Cool.
So he's been around for a while, and he's very knowledgeable. Takes his time laying things out.
All right. Well, thank you for a most interesting call, and please keep listening. And yep. We'll talk again.
You guys hang in. Talk to you later.
Take care. All right. That's going to do it for calls. Now, I'm going to give out that address that I promised to give out. Just to let people know what we're talking about here, it's called Wideband Web SDR, as Kyle was saying. On this page, you can listen to and control a shortwave receiver located at the Amateur Radio Club ETGD at the University of Twente. That's Twente. That's in the Netherlands. In contrast to other web-controlled receivers, this receiver can be tuned by multiple users simultaneously thanks to the use of software-defined radio. I have no idea how many it can handle, but I've never had a problem. I've never been denied. And what I'm going to try to do, and maybe with the help, I couldn't do this over the radio because it's not legal to broadcast radio over radio, but over the internet, I don't think that's an issue. So what we're going to do is we're going to turn audio on, and that's the sound of static. Ain't that cool? Okay, so there's no signal there.
You can also change a lot of
settings. Say again?
You can change some of the settings. You can change which kinds of modulation it uses, like AM. AM, I think, works a little better for certain frequencies. And it's a really good crash course if you've never played around listening to shortwave.
Well, right now I am listening to 14,589.80 kilohertz on upper sideband. And that's, if there were a station, I'd be able to hear it on that frequency. Now, the way shortwave works, the stations broadcast for a little bit of time, and then they stop broadcasting on one frequency. They might move to another frequency. Time of day determines when is best for them to broadcast on certain frequencies. The higher numbers tend to be in daylight hours. Lower numbers tend to be at night. That's about the extent of the knowledge I have. Would anyone like to suggest a frequency or a range, and we could see if we can find something? Don't look so interested.
No, I don't. I mean, whenever I would play with shortwave, it was always with a physical radio that I had, and I never really paid attention with it. I would just kind of go up and down the dial and see if I could pick anything up. I used to travel with the shortwave and see what you could pick up in various countries.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was fun.
Well, okay, let's see what we can do here. I'm going to change the frequency. At this hour, that was not me. I don't know what that was. At this hour, I would go into the 6,000 kilohertz area. So let me enter the frequency 6,000 and see if I get anything. Oops, hit return. Hang on, I don't think it worked. .00. There we go. Okay, there's nothing there. But I can tune up. And let me try doing that. Going through the frequencies here. You'll hear Morse code. You'll hear data. Okay. That's something. I don't know what that was.
Yeah, I'm leading up to 30 kilohertz might be okay.
I'm going to, on a whim, just go to 5975.00 because I know that's been a frequency I've used in the past.
What if you try 6577?
I'm sorry, say again?
What if you try 6577?
6577, okay. .00. Oh, my God. What is that? How did you know about this?
That's curious. Yeah, what about 5598?
Wait. You just didn't pull that number out of nowhere.
No, I didn't.
What is that? You got to tell us.
Well, try 5598, see if it's the same.
Okay. Is that a woodpecker? A woodpecker is a jamming device that some governments use.
Radio-free flatulence or something.
59 what?
5598.
5598. I'm hearing lightning. Mm-hmm. But that's about it. Yeah. Let me go to the chat box, and the chat box will tell us what frequencies people are listening to. Okay, one person is saying 198 kilohertz, which is long wave. Let's try that. Hours of fun. You can just do this all night long.
In the 2024 election, remember that crypto money helped elect Donald Trump. There was something called the Fair Shake.
There you go. Full circle.
Action committee that a lot of crypto entrepreneurs donated to. Well over $100 million went into that. And there was huge backlash during the Biden era against regulators, the cryptocurrency industry. Many of the people in it felt beleaguered, felt under attack. And
so I think that might be Radio 4. That might be BBC Radio 4 Longwave, which is not shortwave. It covers a large land area, but not nearly as large as shortwave.
Indeed.
Hmm. And shortwave, as I understand it, can also be really dependent upon the weather in a lot of ways.
That's true. I'm scanning around longwave now. Well, it's a ton of fun. It really is. And you can just do this all night long. But I'm going to give out the address. It's WebSDR. That's WebSDR, as in Software Defined Radio. .EWI .UTWENTE, that's University of 20, .NL, and then colon 8901, and you need that. It won't work without that. So once again, websdr.ewi.utwente.nl colon 8901. And if none of that makes sense, just look for University of 20, TWENTE, shortwave, and you'll find it that way. All right, so that's some fun. Hopefully people can amuse themselves with this.
Yeah. Yeah, why not?
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. I was doing some scanning as well. It doesn't seem to be very active on this frequency right now, but so maybe a good time to end.
Oh, I think it was a good time to end 20 minutes ago, but yeah, we'll end now. OTH at 2600.com, wrong show. OTH at 2600.com is our email address, and please write to us, give us your thoughts, opinions, suggestions, and tune in next week, 7 o'clock WBAI, 8 o'clock on YouTube. Any final thoughts, people?
Just we got a comment in the chat from our friend Lex, who says, I haven't heard radio static in ages. It's a surprisingly pleasant white noise.
Isn't it? I enjoy it.
No.
I enjoy it all the time. And people are posting frequencies, I understand. So, yeah, there you go. This is how you find things, by tuning around, saying, hey, what's this? And you share the frequency, other people tune to it. And before you know it, you're sharing all kinds of common interests.
Yeah, please send us frequencies that you find interesting to otw at 2600.com, and maybe we'll talk about it or we'll check it out ourselves. We always like tips on things that are out there in the air and online, too.
That's right. Oh, if you want to submit a talk proposal for HOPE, the deadline is Monday. Yeah. June 2nd or 3rd, whatever day Monday is, that's the deadline. So go to the speaker section of hope.net. You'll see all the guidelines on how you should put together your proposal. We have more proposals than ever before, a lot of good talks, and we want to get even more. So please add your ideas, and we'll hopefully be able to include you. You can get tickets to HOPE at the HOPE webpage, either in person or virtual. And I know there are people who are a bit hesitant to travel, and we totally understand that. If you're coming from a foreign country and you don't want to be subjected to searches, seizures, detention, having your social media analyzed and scrutinized, then maybe attending virtually is the best option at this stage. But please help us spread the word about HOPE so that we can continue doing this as we evolve out of the hellhole that we currently find ourselves in. Any questions or additions, anyone?
OTH at 2600.com.
That's our email address, yes.
Yeah, I think I said the wrong one. That's a H as in hat. Right.
It's Jenny Van Anteria at 950 East Warwalk.
Okay, you got to tell us what that is. That's two-way communication, Alex.
Yeah.
Well, so what frequency is that, and what is it?
This is 476.437. And I don't remember what it is. I programmed it in. It's my channel 11 on this TID radio.
But, wait. You're not on the website? You're on something else?
Yeah, this is a physical scanner.
Okay, well, that doesn't help us because we're talking about a particular website, so no one else can listen to what you're listening to.
No, they can listen to it if they tune in, if they're in New York, and they tune in to 476.4.
Yes, which is a totally different thing than going to a website that's in the Netherlands and listening to shortwave. You might be able to type that frequency, and that's possible. Yeah. I don't know about it. That's what I thought you were doing.
But only be in proximity there.
This is a physical scanner here. Yeah, all so right. This is some kind of emergency services.
So you're sharing something that nobody else can do.
Unless they're here and they have a physical radio scanner.
Yes, nobody else. But thanks for sharing. That's kind of cool.
No problem.
We are going to get out of here. And I want to thank everybody for listening and for calling. And we will see you next time. Good night.